He's already been dead and it's messed with his head. It's John's post-life crisis.
Welcome to John's post-life crisis. I am your host, John Johnston, founder and manager of CornNation.com, your Nebraska Cornhusker site of terrific fun. Even more fun that now football season is just 2 weeks away unless something horrible happens. And this episode, we're joined by Drew Pastorek, a contributor at the Champaign Room. And the Champaign Room is our SB Nation Illinois site. We're going to talk about Illinois Fighting Illini football. And we're just going to get right into this. Drew, your first question. Are you ready?
I'm here. I'm ready.
When the Big Ten shut down football, what did you think? What was your reaction to them just saying, we're not going to have football, we're not going to have fall sports? Everything looked fine just a few days before that with a revised schedule, and suddenly we have nothing. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think I was surprised like everybody else was, but I might get heat for this, but it really didn't bother me all that much when they decided to cancel it. At first, you know, just I liked the idea of, and I wrote about this on the Champaign Room after this whole back and forth happened and they decided to redo the schedule and cancel it and redo it. You know, it was kind of nice to see just collectively the schools try to be schools first and not just be blinded by football and the athletics part of it. So, you know, it got to the point where I was just like, you know, whatever the decision is, whether you're going to play, whether you're going to not play, like just make that decision and stick with it. But I mean, I also, you know, I understand why folks would be upset because football is a big part of, you know, our lives, especially in the late summer, early fall. Like we kind of set appointments to watching football and gathering and tailgating and just being around each other and rooting and cheering. So, I mean, I get both sides of it. But initially, yeah, I mean, of course, when they're making schedules and, you know, it seemed to me like it was heading towards that from the start. Like, okay, you're canceling the non-conference games. Like Illinois was supposed to play Illinois State, for example, in the first, I think it was the first game. And Illinois State and Illinois are 45 miles, 50 miles apart. And so it's like, you're going to go conference only. So you're telling me that it's not safe to play Illinois State, which is like a 45-minute bus ride, but it's cool to drive on a bus to New Jersey and play Rutgers or go to, you know, Maryland. It's like, it just kind of, I had that sense, maybe just because I'm very cynical, I kind of had that sense that that's where it was headed. Like you'd see a story every day and it's like, yeah, we're not going to play. Like, that's just not going to happen. And so they canceled it. And, you know, then there was the backlash and the protests and picketing and people suing and all this other stuff. And it's like, I don't feel like people really wanted the transparency. That was like the big word is like, I think they just wanted their way. Like they wanted it to like, and again, it's something I wrote about on the Champaign Room was like, so your response to Kevin Warren caving is to have him cave. So it's like, it was just a very back and forth kind of thing. Like none of it really made any sense. I do love football, so I'm glad it's back, but it's been weird for me. Cause it's like, honestly, like if they just said, we're not going to play, I wouldn't have really cared.
You're one of those, but you're trying to be diplomatic about it.
Yeah, I am, because like I can say that I'm excited for football because I am, but I can also be leery of them trying to play, if that makes sense.
It does. As a Nebraskan, I have to say that I am very happy that Husker football is returning, because by God, it's our lives and. And if I don't say that, I think that somebody would come to my house and set me straight, and they'd probably have, yeah, I don't know, bats or pitchforks.
Maybe that's part of my perspective, too, is that I've seen, like, six decent football seasons in my entire life as an Illinois fan. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's like, you don't really see Indiana and Rutgers and Illinois, like really Northwestern really complaining about it. They're like, yeah, sure. Cancel it. That's fine. Not going to bother us a bit. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe there's because of the lack of tradition, I guess, in the last 20, 25 years, we're like, whatever happens, happens.
So with that segue, let's go into Illinois football.
Yes, sir.
They showed improvement last season. They knocked off Wisconsin, a game that shocked everybody. They went on a four-game winning streak. They had that amazing comeback against Michigan State. But then they finished the season losing to Iowa and Northwestern. They went 6-6 in the regular season, and then they lost 35-20 to California in the Red Box Bowl to finish the season at 6-7. This is a new season for Levy Smith. Everybody loves the beard.
Yeah.
How is he doing?
Well,
from the Illinois standpoint.
Well, the beard is gone now, so that was a big story. It was like, oh my God, he shaved his beard off, so we don't have any more T-shirts to sell. So I think this is it's kind of strange that this is sort of considered a make or break year since he had won, I think, 9 games the first 3 years prior to last year. There's a lot of roster churn with Illinois, so a lot of transfers, you know, a lot of upperclassmen moving out after this year. And there's a lot of uncertainty. There's, you know, they've not, for all the strengths that they have with the transfer portal and bringing veteran players in from elsewhere, the recruiting the last couple of years, as far as, you know, incoming freshmen or, you know, getting those, you know, high school recruits has been a little iffy, if I'm being genteel. So we kind of have a feeling that, you know, yeah, we can build on that 6-win year, feel like we still let a couple slip away. Nebraska last year being a perfect example of that. You know, they tried handing us that game several times, a game that we really, we being Illinois, probably had no business even being in if it weren't for, you know, fumbles and just a sloppy game all the way around. So you look at that and you're like, man, that would have really, you know, but then it's like, the Wisconsin thing probably wouldn't have happened. The Michigan State thing wouldn't have happened. So it's like, you know, Northwestern kills us, and I don't know why. Like, Pat Fitzgerald's just Illinois' daddy for whatever reason. I don't know. They just can't seem to get over that hump and beat Northwestern, especially last year when they were just awful. Like, they were terrible. And, you know, in a game that, you know, we'd already secured bowl eligibility, Illinois was already, like, they knew they were going somewhere, and you'd think knowing that, that would have given them some inspiration to kind of end the season strong, and they just kind of fell flat. But it's a weird situation because of what I said earlier. There's a lot of veteran guys, a lot of really good veteran players, and then after that, it's up in the air. Like, we don't really know what's going to happen. So with the non-conference being canceled, we were sort of at the site, you know, we're kind of saying, you know, Illinois has a really good shot to go in 3-0 heading into Big Ten. And then I think it was Rutgers was the first game and then Nebraska. So it's like, you had a chance realistically of going at least 4-0, possibly 5-0 if you beat Nebraska. And then it's like, you got to win one game in your final seven. And so that got canceled, and it's like, this is the most Illinois thing ever. We have a chance that we have, it looks like we're going to be good, and then it just gets yanked out from under us. So, yeah, I think the way our schedule shook out, Illinois' schedule shook out, wasn't terrible. It could have been a lot worse as far as the crossover goes. Ohio State's going to be a beast no matter who plays them. But getting Rutgers in that East Division crossover is very helpful. And the West, other than Wisconsin, it's been up for grabs. You know, Iowa had that year in 15 where they went 12-0, but no one's really reached out and grabbed it. So I think if you get hot early and win a couple of games, can they, you know, they could go 2-7 or they could go 5-4. And I really wouldn't be surprised either way.
So no, you're kind of in the same, everybody, wow. Tried having a sentence there. Everybody's in the same position kind of in the West where we're not really sure of what's going to happen, what's going to happen next. You know, Wisconsin is the only program that seems to be consistent from year to year. Iowa's consistently average, and Nebraska's enjoy pointing that out whenever we can. Your offense, you do have a quarterback, Brandon Peters, returning, that's a pretty good quarterback. Who else is around him that's going to be there to score points? Reggie Corbin, who was an excellent running back, is gone. Who's going to replace him? Let's hear about the offense.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited about the offense. I really am. And that's strange, again, based on what happened heading into last season. Prior to Peters getting there, I think it was at least 5 starting quarterbacks, maybe even 6 in a 2-year period after Wes Lunt left. So, Lovie Smith, to his credit, him and his coaching staff, they knew you can't compete. Like, you can have as good a team as there is, but if the quarterback play is not there, it's just not going to work. Like, you've got to have somebody who can get the ball to somebody and make some plays. And Peters, it was a little tough early on in the season, but I think he did show that improvement. 1,800, 1,900 yards isn't a ton. He didn't miss some time. He had some injuries, some concussions and some things like that where he missed some time. But you could tell he had a firm grasp of the offense. He's a game manager in the good sense that he's not probably going to be the reason Illinois wins, but he's not going to make that, soul crushing mistake that costs you a game. So having that veteran guy in place, I'm a Bears fan. I love Jay Cutler, but he's not going to do that where he throws the ball and it's just this like, oh my God, how do you make that throw? Like, he's just not that guy. He's a very mature player. He handles himself well. Teammates seem to like him. He's got a firm grasp of the offense. So going in, you feel good about him. Behind him, you're not really sure. So if he is a situation where he's not healthy and he misses some time, Matt Robinson was named the number 2 quarterback, I think, yesterday or today. Lovie Smith did confirm that he is going to be the number 2 quarterback. And he can run a little bit, move around a little bit, but he's not shown that he can make plays consistently to, it's disappointing because it's like, okay, so basically if our number 1 quarterback is gone, we don't have a chance. That's how it felt last year at times. So Peters being healthy, being there for the full season would be great. He's got a lot of toys to throw the ball to. Luke Ford coming in from Georgia had to sit out last year due to the transfer rules. Him being healthy, him being available, he's 6'6", he's 260. Any team in the country, except for Georgia apparently, would kill to have him. He's a game changer. He's a physical freak. Josh Emeterbebe, another transfer from USC, came in last year, and it was pretty clear right away that he was the number 1 guy in the receiving core. They've since added a couple other transfers. Kamari Thompson from Missouri was ruled eligible immediately this year. Brian Hightower, he used to play for Miami, was ruled immediately eligible as well. So there's a lot of talent as far as the pass catchers go. Receiving core looks really good to me. Daniel Barker was the starting tight end last year. He's not as good as blocking as Ford is, so you could see a lot of 2, maybe 3 tight end sets. Emeterbebe's brother, Daniel Emeterbebe, joined the team as well. So, again, milking the transfer portal, getting those guys in. If it's only even for 1 or 2 years, making an impact, helping this team win, that's going to be big. The running back spot is up in the air, and typically, Lovie Smith likes to do that ground and pound, ball control kind of style. And he doesn't have Reggie Corbin, doesn't have Dre Brown anymore either, who was the second leading rusher, 60-year senior, I believe. So, and the guy who was going to be the number one running back coming into the year opted out due to COVID. So you have a couple of guys, Ravon Bonner opted out due to COVID. His name escaped me for a second, but you have some guys like Mike Epstein, who's looked really, really sensational, but he hasn't been able to stay on the field. He's missed time all of his first three seasons due to injury, whether it's a foot or a knee or whatever. He's just had a hard time staying on the field. And then you have some other guys that were not expected to be, you know, number one backs. So that's really where we're skeptical as fans about, you know, who's going to run the ball. If they can stay healthy, it's going to be good, but you still need to use the run to set up the pass. So having all these toys to throw to is great, but you can't just drop back 50 times and not run the ball. So that's kind of the question mark is who's going to be that bell cow for Illinois. Offensive line looks pretty good. A lot of depth there. They did have another transfer from Wofford, Blake Gerasotti, who was slated to start at right guard, and he's going to have shoulder surgery, missed the whole year. So now you're kind of wondering, where's that spot going to get filled? So that kind of takes part of your depth away when you've got to fill in another spot. So, but overall, a veteran offensive line, done a good job with the run and pass protection. So, you know, running back, I think, is the major question heading into the season, because the receivers, tight ends, O-line looks pretty good, and we have a competent, satisfactory quarterback as well.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
So the offense is going to be capable of scoring points.
I think so. I think, I think they'd be doing, the coaching staff would be doing the offense a disservice if they tried to run the ball more. It's like they have a lot of guys that are big and long and, how you'd ideally build it. You have the possession receiver like you met Orbebe, not a burner. He's not going to kill you. He's not like a 4-2, 4-3, 4-4 guy, but he's 6'3", 215. Like just, he's like a Clydesdale horse. I mean, he is just like, you see him and you're just like, physically, he is a beast. Like he's incredible. And then you have some more speed guys. Thompson at Missouri was on the track team. He ran a 4.3 40. You have Trayvon Sidney, who played with Amat Arbebe at USC, who is more of the speedy slot receiver guys. I mean, they've got some dudes. You just got to find a way to get in the ball. And Rod Smith is a very creative play caller offensively. Right. So, we kind of trust that he's going to come up with something. There's only one ball. You can't throw it to everybody. Not everyone's going to have 50, 60 catches, but there's going to be enough to make everybody happy. At least that's what I feel like going into the season.
So I take it the weakness of Illinois is on the defensive side of the ball then?
I think more so with rushing the passer. I think up front, can they impose their will on that side? They had Wole Batiku last year from USC, who the first four or five games looked really, really good. He led the nation in sacks for a brief period early in the year. Then he had some injury issues, and then once we got into the heat of the Big Ten season, wasn't really as effective. And he's gone. He left early to go to the NFL, and looks like that wasn't a great decision because he didn't get drafted. He didn't really stick on with another team. So I think another year would have really helped him and helped the defensive front overall. A lot of inexperience, a lot of changeover on that defensive line. So not really sure what that's going to look like. I know Moses Okpala, one of the defensive linemen, was flipped to the O-line. So that could be another, and he's 6'7", 300 pounds. So that might be a better spot for him long-term because he wasn't getting a lot of reps on the D-line. But it's, again, one fewer guy to roll out there, you know, one less guy to lay out on the defensive front. So linebackers are pretty good. You know, Jake Hansen's back, you know, one of the leading tacklers from a year ago. Milo Eifler's back, who transferred from Washington and played last year. So linebackers, I feel pretty good. You know, that secondary has some experience. I think they improved as the year went on last year. They've got some depth now. Marquis Beeson, who was one of the more highly touted recruits coming into 2019. He had a knee injury, missed the whole season. So he's back now. He said he's all in. There was talks that maybe he was going to leave and go elsewhere. He is staying put at least for now. And he figures to be an impact player. He's one of the best recruits as far as ratings. If you're enamored with that kind of thing, you know, he was one of the more highly rated recruits that Lovie Smith was able to snare and bring to Champaign. So I think, you know, the passing defense is going to be okay. You know, the defense wasn't outstanding anyway. So saying they were great is not accurate. They were a good defense. Missed a lot of tackles. So the fundamental stuff, the mistakes and like missed assignments, that seemed to plague them a lot. So if they can clean up that, you know, I think the passing defense will be okay, but rushing the passer, attacking the line of scrimmage, you know, winning that battle up front could be an issue.
You know, when you started this, you sounded like, woe is me. I mean, maybe not that bad, but, you know, kind of an Illinois fan that's like, yeah, whatever. But the team you're describing to me doesn't sound terrible. I mean, they sound like a bowl team. If we were in a normal year, they sound like a bowl team or maybe a possibly 7-5, 8-4 team. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're going to get there? I mean, we're not going to, you know, obviously we're not playing 12 games, but when you look at the season overall, what do you think is going to happen with Illinois?
Yeah.
You talked about it a little bit before, but.
Yeah, I would have easily penciled them in for 7 wins at the start of the year in a normal year. Like I said, the non-conference schedule was very favorable with Illinois State, Bowling Green, and UConn all at home first 3 weeks. Like that has a good chance to get you rolling and get some good stuff going heading into Big Ten. Cause you know, the Big Ten is going to be tough. It always is. And, you know, we as fans, you know, us amongst the site, we're kind of thinking, yeah, they probably have 3 Big Ten wins in them, maybe 4. So if they can start with that 3 wins, you know, all they're going to need is 3 more, and then they're kind of in the same situation that they're in now. So 7 wins now, I mean, if they went 7-2 or 6-2 in this format would be amazing. That'd be outstanding. But as we kind of touched on before, you know, the Big Ten West, it's a lot different than the Big Ten East. You know, you're not going through Michigan. You're not going through Penn State and Ohio State. You know, there are a lot of games where, you know, it's going to be a kind of a coin flip kind of thing. It's just going to be depending on, you know, field conditions, or it's going to be who's injured, who's healthy, you know, how well is the quarterback playing, who's available. You know, I think I had them at 4 wins, you know, since they're doing the eight game regular season, and there's that Champions Week where they just kind of put, okay, you're the second place team, you're going to play the other second place team, that kind of a thing. So I had them at 4 wins, 4-5 after the 9 weeks. And I did have them going to a bowl because honestly, I don't know what the bowl season's going to look like. I think that just based on what the bowls look for, I think they would take a 3-6 Big Ten team over a 6-3 Conference USA team, just based on, you know, fans traveling and supporting their team. You know, they're all thinking about money, thinking about gate, all those kind of things. You know, Nebraska fans travel really well. Iowa fans travel really well. And of course, Michigan, Ohio State, they're going to have fans show up everywhere. So if Nebraska goes 1-7, but they qualify for a bowl, I think a bowl committee is going to say, you know, maybe we should put them in over Louisiana. Might be a better fit, might be more worthwhile for us. So I think if they're doing the format that we've heard about where everyone's going to be eligible or there's not really that, you know, that cap of being 500 or better gets you in, I think certainly if they're in that 4 or 5 win range, they would certainly be in consideration for a bowl. Even if they won 3, they might be in that conversation. I think 4 is probably a safer conversation, though. I look at Purdue and Rutgers as the two that you're probably going to win for Illinois. I have those penciled in as wins. And then I think there's a combination of 3 or 4 other games where you could get 2 more wins out of that. I think Nebraska is one of those. Again, it just depends on what happens. You know, that was a really sloppy game last year that Illinois probably should have won, even though they had no business winning, but they were gifted that win. They couldn't take advantage of it. So I think Illinois is certainly capable of stealing a win from a better team like a Minnesota, a Wisconsin, maybe even an Iowa. And then you have that inevitable clunker that they're going to have where they should win a game and they're probably going to stink it out. So, you know, they're not a great team by any stretch, but they can be an average middle of the road team. And in a pandemic shortened season, average might be good enough to get you into a bowl and a good one. Who knows?
So let's say they make a bowl and let's say they finish it. Let's say they finish at 500. What's the outlook for Lovie Smith on that? Is this just a write-off year where everybody goes, we're not going to count anything? Or do you think it adds or subtracts his ability to continue to have Illinois get better in the long term? Or what is the long term for Illinois, I guess? Does anybody know?
Yeah, that's a great question. We really don't know. It's, you know, the transfer portal's been very favorable to Illinois. I think they've, you know, other than, you know, Justin Fields going to Ohio State, that's the obvious outlier. I think Illinois has really done a great job of coaxing players to come to Champaign. I think they've done a really good job of using the transfer portal to their advantage to get, you know, some veteran guys who maybe didn't get a chance to show out elsewhere. You know, Emad Orbebe is a great example. You know, you see him on the field in these games against Michigan State. I mean, he was the best player on the field, hands down, against Michigan State. Just, they had no answer for him. He's making 25-yard plays, 60-yard plays, 70. He had, I think he caught 4 passes in that game for like 160 yards. I mean, he's unstoppable. And you're like, he's not good enough to see the field at USC. Like what? Like what's going on? So they've done a really good job of bringing in guys that fit and help them in the short term. And then I sort of talked about it earlier. The long-term future, you know, we kind of had this 2-year thing. Like this year, last season was going to be, you know, we got to the bowl game. That's great. That's an achievement in and of itself, especially the way the season started with losing to Eastern Michigan. It's just like, oh my God, here we go again. And then you're 32-point underdogs or something like that against Wisconsin. You're like, yeah, homecoming. Great. Have fun with that. And then somehow they, you know, they hang with it. I think that kind of turned the tide. And the Michigan game where they were down big early but kept fighting and kept chipping away and made that a competitive game. You sort of saw the tide turn there that maybe they're getting this. Maybe they're starting to feel good. Maybe they're feeling better about themselves and the outlook of the team. You know, getting to the bowl game was a big step. And now with a veteran team established, not a lot of guys, they have a lot of their core coming back. So this is one of those things where this season needs to be a good season because it does look sort of bleak – moving forward because of the inexperience we talked about, lack of impact recruits coming in from the high school end. There's going to be, it's going to look very similar to what it did the first couple of years of Lovie Smith's tenure, where there's a lot of freshmen, a lot of sophomores getting thrown in. And of course you're going to have some that do really well, but it doesn't bode well in the Big Ten rolling out 50, 60 kids that haven't really played. You know, it's hard to win in a conference like the Big Ten when you have, you know, 15 freshman starters or something to that effect. It's just hard to do, you know, because they're learning on the fly. And when you're playing Penn State and Iowa and Ohio State and, you know, teams like that, you know, they're not going to feel sorry for you that, oh, you've got 20 freshmen that are starting on your team. You know, they're going to pounce on you. So yeah, this year, we as fans should try to enjoy it as much as possible, because this might be the last best chance for a couple more years. But I don't think Lovie Smith's in any danger. I think Josh Whitman, the athletic director, is really, really enamored with him. And, you know, it brings a very professional atmosphere to Illinois. You know, he's not some loose cannon head coach. He doesn't have any real off the field problems. There's not a lot of baggage there. You know, he is a coach that, you know, if you go into a recruit's living room, the parents are going to fall in love with him and want their kid to play for him. So ultimately that's what you want. He has provided that kind of stability. So I don't think he's in any danger, but of course you got to win. So if you're going 2-10 every year, you can be the nicest, sweetest guy in the world, but it's a bottom line business. So I think at some point it is going to get to that point where we just need a guy that can win games consistently. And right, you know, if he can turn a corner this year and have some positive momentum, that might help him out. But in the near term, he's fine. He's not going anywhere.
Well, one of the things that I brought up on one of our other podcasts, because we have a gob of podcasts at Corn Nation, is this idea that because of this bloody virus, players are staying closer to home. Nebraska has lost some players in other sports, for example, women's basketball, where one of them literally transferred to one of our top players, who was a very good player, transferred to like an NAIA team just so she could be in her hometown. I'll give you a hypothetical.
Okay.
If that's the case, if players are staying closer to their hometowns, doesn't Illinois have an advantage because of the Chicago area or because of the population in Illinois? I mean, compared to like an Iowa or a Nebraska.
Yeah, that's a tough one, John, because that's been a big criticism of Lovie Smith and his staff. They've done a really good job of finding players in Georgia and Florida and Texas and elsewhere. But he's had difficulty with the in-state players playing for them and coming to Illinois and committing. So, you know, the St. Louis area is a nice hotbed for Illinois. That's been successful recently, you know, because Champaign's not too far. You know, there is still a big Illini footprint in that part of the country as well, even though it's not technically in-state. It's, you know, it is a very, you know, Illini favorable region. You have Missouri there, and that's the only real big Power Five school within shouting distance. So it's tough. I mean, in theory, and that's one of the reasons Luke Ford wanted to come to Illinois. You know, he did transfer to be closer to his ailing grandparents who didn't get a chance to watch him play. So he wanted to be closer to home. I suppose it's possible that you would see that. But it's been hard for whatever reason. You know, I can't explain it. Maybe somebody else that follows the team more closely than I do, that's on the pulse and maybe like around the team more, can kind of pinpoint that. But that has been a big issue. Is, you know, a lot of those Chicago kids, I mean, you in theory are absolutely correct. Hey, there's the Chicago pipeline. There's Peoria. There's St. Louis. Like, there's a lot of, you know, even Indianapolis isn't too far away. It's a couple hours. So in theory, yeah, there's, you know, some pretty good pockets to get some players and that aren't too far away from Champaign. But for whatever reason, he's really struggled with that. And the coaching staff has struggled with that. It's getting better. The offensive line, they've done a good job recently of bringing in some of getting some commitments from offensive line prospects in state. Olin Kreutz's son is an example, who played for the Bears for many, many, many years. His son is obviously he still lives in the Chicago area. His son goes to one of the parochial schools in the Chicago area. He recently committed back in the summer. That was kind of a big get, like, all right, there's a Chicago guy. We're bringing in those kind of kids. But it has been difficult to bring those top tier in-state recruits and have them stay at Illinois. So ideally, that's what I would like to see. I know a lot of fans feel the same way.
Wait, okay. An outsider's look at Nebraska, because, you know, I follow our fans as closely as I can. I follow our football team, obviously, but I think it's always good to get an outsider's perspective. When you look at Nebraska, let's first start with this. Let's go back to the beginning and say, when you saw like Desmond Howard or somebody saying, you know, Nebraska wants to lead the Big Ten, the hell with them, let them go. What was your reaction to that? First of all, that Nebraska wanted to leave the Big Ten, which we never did. But the whole Scott Frost tension, the Nebraska tension, tell us about what you think of us.
Is there a dump button on this thing? Do you want to go there? I kind of echoed that sentiment, you know, and again, I'm looking at it from 10,000 feet away. I'm not following the team the way you obviously would be in the fan bases. So I just look at, you know, Twitter, and Twitter is great, and Twitter is also a hellscape at the same time. So you're kind of seeing what you want to see a lot of times. But my reaction was, you know, if Nebraska really wants to leave that badly, bye, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out kind of a thing. It just, you know.
We haven't become close friends? What the hell?
I feel like, and again, this is an outsider's view, so if I'm incorrect or if you have a different perspective, feel free to correct me. It seems like from the get-go, Nebraska seemed like they were leaving the Big 12 because they couldn't get past, you know, the Oklahomas and the Texases and those kind of things, and they saw an opportunity to kind of run roughshod over the Big Ten. Maybe that's how they felt initially. I don't know how they feel now. But that seemed, from our perspective as being around the Big Ten, as what they perceived themselves as and what and how they perceived the conference. And I don't feel that Nebraska in the last 10 or 15 years has really earned the right to feel that way about themselves, if that makes sense. So they certainly have a lot of talent. They've had some good squads. But I think most rational people would look at what's happened with Nebraska the last, you know, since they joined the Big Ten, and say, like, they've been just kind of a middle of the road team. Like, they haven't really shown that they're Nebraska. You know, it's like the joke about Texas being back, and are they, are they not? And when they look like they are, they have a stinker, and it's like, oh, so you're not back. Okay. That's kind of how it's felt from my point of view watching Nebraska. Is, you know, they have those games where they look like they're pretty good, and they have, you know, like the Colorado game last year where you're just like, really? Like,
you bring that one up. Huh?
Like, really? Like, okay. Like, yep, you're right. You guys are back. Totally. Like, don't need to convince anybody but yourselves. Like, so, like, And they've kind of fit in that, you know, second tier of the Big Ten West instead of being like a top two or three team in the Big Ten as a whole. They've kind of just been another team within the league. And so I think that's the general perception that most of us that don't cheer for Nebraska have kind of seen. So, you know, I think it's good that they're in the Big Ten. I think, you know, they do bring a lot to the table. And they, you know, more so than I think a Rutgers or a Maryland. That's a whole other issue. We could probably talk about that for 2 hours on another show. I think at least geographically it's a fit. You know, recruits. You're competing for kind of the same players as these other schools in the Big Ten. It's not off the wall to think of Nebraska in the Big Ten. But, you know, I do think there was a little bit of piety there where, you know, we're Nebraska, and because we were Nebraska and Nebraska football was this juggernaut, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, that's just going to be the way it is forever. And as an Illinois fan, said I've seen in my lifetime probably 5 or 6 decent seasons. So I'm a little skewed in that regard too. Like for me, Illinois goes 7-5, build Lovey a statue. That's great. But for Nebraska, for teams that have higher expectations, that's, you know, that's obviously a bit different.
I would say that, I guess me, I personally, I never expected us to walk into the Big Ten and kick ass because I lived in Minnesota since 1989, and I'm very familiar with the Big Ten. And now that's not true in the sport of baseball, but we're not talking about baseball right now.
Right,
now,
right.
Nebraska did expect to walk into the conference and kick the crap out of everybody in baseball.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened. Although I will say that we are responsible for lifting the barrier, lifting the bar for baseball in the Big Ten. And I've covered baseball quite extensively over the last, this will be my 14th year, I think, at Coronation. But the Big Ten just doesn't really care about baseball very much at all. They have some good teams, and you have some, you know, like Mike Anderson at Minnesota has to be one of the best baseball coaches in the nation. But he's constantly fighting that cold weather problem.
Yeah.
Illinois had some good teams. Anyway, we shouldn't go too far into baseball. I really, you know what, I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you a story. Last year, I shoot photography sometimes, and I've shot the Big Ten wrestling tournament. Was a lot of fun. Last year, I did shoot the Final Four in volleyball. Illinois was in the Final Four in volleyball. Nebraska knocked them off after they were up 2-0. You know, I was set to shoot the Big Ten baseball tournament, the NCAA wrestling tournament finals, the College World Series, and it really, in baseball season, all that stuff went away, and it was really, yeah, honestly, pretty upsetting. I cried like a baby at one of my neighbor's houses talking about this. So, you know, the fact that we're going to get any football at all, I think, is a blessing. And I hope that it all turns out okay for the rest of us. You know, you mentioned earlier that we should just be thankful to have this. And
yeah,
that's probably the best attitude. But when actual football season started in my house, I watched football from the morning until the night. There hasn't been as much of it. But I was screaming at refs, and I'm yelling at coaches that aren't on my team. And my wife comes downstairs, and she says, "You feel pretty good now, don't you?"
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, this is what I want. I want to be able to bitch about my team and bitch about referees and officials and stupid coaches that coach at other teams and Bo Pelini's shitty defense at LSU. That's what I want.
Yeah.
It's a part of my life. And hopefully I'll get back here in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else I've left out about Illinois that you would like to tell the faithful fans of Nebraska?
We covered a lot of it. I think it is going to be, I hope, you know, obviously we haven't played any games yet. So on paper, the offense looks like it's going to be a fun team to watch. I do think that they have enough power on offense to score some points and kind of make up for any mistakes that they may make. I'm in the same boat as you. I do feel like we have a sense of normalcy, and I know what I said at the start of the interview, John, about kind of, you know, if it happens, fine, I'll watch. I'm not going to say I'm not going to watch, because I will, because I'm a masochist just like most sports fans are. But, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, you know, I'm just hoping basketball season happens. So for me, being an Illinois fan, I'm like, well, as long as they can play basketball and they don't cancel that again, I'm okay. But, yeah, like, as much as I love watching Coastal Carolina and, you know, and teams like that, it is going to be kind of fun to bitch about your own team for a change. So it is going to welcome a night. It's going to be a nice change. And, you know, I think this is going to help in the long run with, you know, I wasn't one of those people that's like, they should fire Kevin Warren and they should roast him on an open flame. Like, I wasn't one of those people. Like, it's an impossible situation. He was damned if he did, damned if he didn't. He was going to piss off people either way, no matter what his decision was. If he decided to not have the season, then it was going to be, oh, he's playing politics. And if he doesn't, and if he does do the season, it's, oh, he's only trying to get money. So you're never going to win that fight. Like, I don't want that job. Like, I wouldn't want to have his job. Like, it's an impossible situation. It just is. So I think from an Illinois perspective, you know, I think they're going to be a fun team to watch from afar. And as a Bears fan who's watched a lot of crappy quarterbacks and a lot of just inconsistent play over the years, if you're going to be an average or below average team, at least be fun to watch. You know, if they lose, you know, like the Big 12 is a great example. You know, I love offense. If a game's 56-49, I'm happy with that. It's an entertaining way. I'd rather watch that than, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, you know,
right,
12-7 every week. So, you know, Ohio State shouldn't be the only team allowed to score 40 points in a game. I think other teams should be able to join in on that fun. And I think Illinois has the firepower to do that. They might also give up 40. But again, if you're going to be bad or average, at least make the games entertaining. At least give you a reason to tune in. So it's the Jameis Winston effect. You know, he might throw 30 interceptions in a season, but he's going to throw for 5,000 yards and he's going to throw for 40 touchdowns. So it's never going to be boring. And I think the Big Ten is as less boring now as it's been in a long time. And I think the pandemic is really going to make it even more interesting because it's kind of a level playing field for a lot of teams because you don't have a lot of home field advantages. I mean, some stadiums are going to let fans in, I think. Eventually, I think it will get to that point where there's, you know, 50, 60% or whatever. I think at some point that will happen. You know, but a lot of teams, you know, unless you're Penn State and Ohio State, you know, they feel like, you know, we can sneak up on some folks and surprise some people and you know, kind of do what Illinois did last year. Once that Wisconsin game happened, it was like, oh, and the Michigan State game happened and people were like, maybe this is something to watch, you know, down the road. So I think it's going to be kind of cool. You know, we saw with baseball, it made things a lot more interesting because every game was important. You didn't have that little lull halfway through the season where, you know, all right, we'll just do all-star break and then we'll start picking it back up. You know, it kind of revved some teams up and it gives everybody a chance. And, you know, heading into the season in 2 weeks, I think that's all you can hope for is your team having a chance. You know, it's weird not thinking that your team's going to be any good and then you still have to watch and cover the team and be like, well, this went as we expected because our team sucks. So I think at least I feel that way. I don't know how other Illinois fans and Nebraska fans feel, but, you know, I think this is an opportunity to seize a moment. And Illinois has as good a chance as any to be in that, you know, they're not going to win the Big Ten West. I'm not going to be crazy. I'm not going to say, you know, they're going to dethrone Wisconsin and, you know, Minnesota and those other teams that are ahead of them. But if they can finish, you know, third in the Big Ten West or fourth in the Big Ten West, I'd say it's a pretty damn successful season.
All right, we're going to end there. I thank Drew Pastorek of the Champagne Room for joining me to talk about Illinois football. And I wish you a good 2020 football season, but not that good. And that's it for John's Post-Life Crisis. Thank you for listening, and go Big Red.